It's not actually 9 a.m. on July 18th. It's actually 9 a.m. on June 19th, 2013. And we're just trying to mess with your minds, playing a rerun right before we start the actual show. Anyway, you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. You can learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and joining me today is CAP membership guy, Dan Williams. Welcome.
Good morning.
And also, we have the executive director of the Children's Museum of Atlanta, Jane Turner. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
We, you know, Elizabeth is taking a little hiatus, so she's not going to be joining us today. And I'll keep you posted on her whereabouts. We believe in transparency on this show, sort of. We lie when it's comfortable, and you know, we tell the truth when that works. And speaking of saying the right things on the radio or not saying the right things on the radio, have you all been tuned into this story about the mayhem and the ahem and the Atlanta shock jocks that got fired?
I saw mention of this yesterday, Jane. Are you
yeah,
up
on just
this?
A little bit, really. Just the surface of that story.
Well, we like to fill our listeners in, keep you guys abreast of the news in case you didn't get a chance. You know, one of the things about the news in this day and age is that there's so much of it that depending on what station you watch or internet site you go to, or you may miss something. It's very easy to miss something. And frankly, some of it, I have had years where I was so overwhelmed by the quantity of news that I just tuned out altogether. And I said, forget it. I don't even care. If this does not affect my bottom line, my life personally, I don't care. I'm over that now. I'm sort of back into paying attention. But what happened was, this is really terrible, actually. What happened was these guys that are on 790 The Zone sports station, it's Chris Domino, Nick something or other, and Steak Shapiro, I guess. They did a, they're calling it a skit. They did a skit in which they were, I don't even know who comes up with this, right? Making fun of the football player who has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and who basically has he's in his 30s, and he's lost all of his abilities at this point. I mean, he can't speak. He's in a wheelchair, and I think he's using one of those computers with his eyes, literally, to communicate.
Wow.
Excuse me. I'm a little bit hoarse today. I have a bit of a cold, but anyway, sorry. They literally made fun of him. This, and I'm not going to – don't quote me on this story, but I did read the transcript of what they said, and it was along the lines – first of all, they imitated him by using a robotic voice, which is already, like, you know, horribly tacky. And then they were basically saying something along the lines of, just kill me already. Like, just smother me and kill me. Really, really, really tasteless. So like these things tend to do, it went viral. It went all over the United – it wasn't just Atlanta. It became a national story, and they were fired. So – you know, as always, when there's something like that that happens in the media, I sort of like to talk about it because it's really interesting when these companies are hired. You know, Rush Limbaugh had a similar incident recently. You know, he was being criticized for something. I mean, Howard Stern gets fired every other day from somewhere, you know. and it's just interesting to me that when they hire these shock jocks and their whole job is to create controversy.
Right.
And then when they do actually create controversy and they get national attention, their bosses are sort of surprised, and then they fire them, you know.
Those guys, though, I don't know that they would have fit in the shock jock category. I mean, they're obviously paid to provoke and be
obnoxious.
Obnoxious, right? That certainly sells on FM radio. But I don't see where guys like this are actually paid to tell just tasteless and offensive sorts of, you know, this sort of people, the jokes about people with disabilities and whatnot. I mean,
it's terrible. And it's interesting because I'm, you know, fairly sensitive about things like that. Like, I don't get offended if someone tells a joke I don't like, but I don't like when people do that. I'm not the kind of person that will stop somebody and say I'm offended and put my nose in the air or whatever, but I don't like it. And when, like, I didn't let my daughter behave that way. And, you know, my boyfriend occasionally will say something that I think is inappropriate, you know, make a racial slur or say something. No offense. He's not listening. Whatever. He doesn't listen to my show. But I don't like that. And part of the reason I don't like it is because I think that even if it's okay what you're saying, you're getting too close to the line. And if you're comfortable that close to the line, there's a good chance you're going to cross the line next time.
Right.
And that's what these guys did, I think. I used to know Chris Domino, who's one of the three guys back in the day when I worked at WSB. And he was there at the time. And he's a really nice guy. So I'm sure that, you know, he's not evil. He's not a bad guy, but he just probably walked that line for so long.
Right.
Well, I think now also the difference is that these comments become viral, as you said. So something that is tasteless that is said in a room with friends or even a small room is suddenly all over the internet. It becomes global in a matter of an hour.
Ask Mitt Romney, right?
Right. And on the one hand, you don't blame, you know, people for getting outraged. You know, on the other hand, you think, like, get a life. And then the third hand, if we could have three hands, you know, these companies have no choice at that point but to fire these people because they have sponsors that they're beholden to. And if the listeners are clamoring for it, the sponsors aren't going to pay up anymore unless they do the firing. So it's kind of unfortunate because, like I said, I don't know Steak Shapiro or the other guy, Nick something or other, whose name I can't even remember. But I do know Chris Domino, at least I did, you know, 20 years ago. And I feel bad for him because now he lost his job and he did something stupid. They've all apologized, by the way, not only publicly, but they've literally gotten in touch with this football player and apologized directly to him. And, you know, he's accepted their apology and he's basically said, you know, we all make mistakes and, you know, it's how you handle yourself after a mistake that defines who you are. So well, he's been gracious.
I also think it's interesting to I think we're still working out as a society what the etiquette is for this more viral communication. There's etiquette. There are things that people would never say among friends that somehow they're going to say on the radio.
Well, and a lot of times they do things like that. And I don't know if this was the case or not. They do things like that to get attention. You know, a lot of the viral videos, I mean, people wouldn't actually drive their Jeep into a pool. I mean, they do that because they want to be a YouTube sensation, right? So there's also this whole look at me thing that's going on in our society that's hopefully going to go away. Because I'm not really a fan.
Whew, I don't know. I don't know about that one.
You think it's here to stay? Well, maybe it's a personality thing and there always have been and there always will be.
Yeah, I've noticed a certain trend in social media in the last year or so. The selfie. You know, have you noticed the selfie, the picture?
When you take pictures of yourself, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then I've noticed that, you know, some people out there on Instagram, Facebook, that, you know, it's like an everyday. Every day is a selfie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and so like
it's funny that it has a name even.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you're here to educate me, Dan.
Right. Well, you know, I'm being educated, you know, constantly.
Well, it's a good point, and it's an interesting thing because, you know, being part of the Children's Museum, obviously you deal with the youngest of the younger generation, and you know, my daughter again is in college now, but she does that. All kids they do that. That's part of what they do now, and in fact, they make the technology so that taking a selfie is easy.
But we didn't. I didn't do that.
I feel weird doing it to this day.
Yeah.
I don't even really know how to do it.
It didn't even exist when I was in college, and I wasn't in college that long ago.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but
it's a newer trend, and I don't really know how to do it. Like, I was on vacation with my daughter, and she would do that. Like, she would take a picture of herself in front of a building or whatever, and I would be like, here, take my camera, take a picture of me, you know? And then, like, or she would try to get in, like, with me, and I would try to do it with my cell phone or whatever, and I would take, like, a picture of the top of our heads. Like, I didn't know how to do it, you know? But you're right. It is an interesting trend, this look at me thing.
Right. Because now everyone has a device in their pocket that is able to broadcast themselves.
Yeah, it's very, very bizarre. All right, moving on. Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with those guys. I'm sure we'll get a, you know, an update in the media and find out where they end up and or if it just fizzles out and that's it, like many of these things do. But speaking of a trend that's actually been going on for a while, gosh, I'm really struggling. And it's funny because I've been on the air for a couple of years on this show in particular, and I have not had a cold this whole time. This is the first time. I don't know how to handle it. I'm falling apart
summer.
Over here. Yeah, it's time for a summer cold, I guess. You know, it's just because I've had every other illness this year that one could possibly get that now I feel the need to have a cold as well. Dear God. All right. So Music Midtown will be back and has announced its lineup for 2013. And the dates, of course, which are going to be Friday, September 20th and Saturday, September 21st. I'm going to read them to you. And part of the reason I am, which is kind of funny to me now, this is also another sign of my, you know, age. So sad that I actually only know like who four maybe of the 10 are. And
well,
only
so you can start with the ones that you know.
Well, on Friday we have Cake, Driving and Crying, Jane's Addiction. I would say I know those three and the rest I don't. Well, Journey. I know Journey.
Right.
But I had to even think back. Is that the Journey I know or is that a different Journey, a new Journey? No, I think it's Journey. Okay. Then North Mississippi All-Stars, Phoenix, the Mowglies, and 2 Chainz. Do you know all those?
Not the Mowglis. That's a new one on me.
All right. Saturday, September 21st, I'm going to say I know one of the groups, which is the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and the rest I've never heard of. And here's
you know, five? It's five?
It's just embarrassing. I mean, really, I'm just wearing my
age. I guarantee there will be people at the event that know less than five.
Okay. All right. I like that. I'm glad. Okay. Here's the rest of the lineup for Saturday. Arctic Monkeys, Capital Cities, Imagine Dragons, Kendrick Lamar, Mona, Queens of the Stone Age, and Rainwolf. Do you know all of those?
What, it was like six out of eight.
Oh, I missed. There's more on the back page. Hold, please. The Black Lips, The Neighborhood, Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs, Weezer. I've heard of Weezer. And six. ZZ Ward, which is different than ZZ Top, apparently. Right. All right. Anyway, make your plans for Music Midtown September 20th and 21st.
That's a big lineup. That's, you know, Kendrick Lamar had one of the biggest albums of the last year.
See, this is where I'm outdated.
I'm with you. I know the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Jane's Addiction, and that's...
all right.
So well, a lot to learn about, I guess.
I try to stay somewhat current. Well, this is what happens to me. I go through phases just like I do with the news where I'm like, okay, I need to catch up. And I'll get my daughter to send me some stuff, and I'll try to pay attention, and I'll sort of catch up a little bit. And then I'll lose it again. And actually, right now, it's kind of funny because I'm the same way with books. I go through phases. I used to own a bookstore. I'm a big reader. But because I had to read for work, I got sort of turned off, and I wasn't reading as much. And so for a number of years, I still was reading. I'm in a book club. I was still reading, but I just wasn't reading as avidly as I sometimes do. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I got to catch up. So now I'm reading all these like business books and sort of big books that happened years ago to catch up. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. Right now I'm reading Good to Great. Jim Collins, do you guys ever read that?
Yes, love it.
Yeah, and it's pretty fascinating. I'm about maybe a quarter of the way in, and I'm like really into it. I'm kicking myself for I could have been great by now if I had only read if I had only read it, you know, 10 years ago when it came out, or 13 years ago. And actually, like, the first lesson in there is that you need to be humble. You need to have humility to be a great leader. I'm going to struggle with that one. All right, moving on. I know we like to talk about jobs here in the city and, you know, things coming into town. So two stories caught my eye. One I didn't print out, but Coke, I guess, is doing a big tech center.
Yep.
Do you know about that?
Yeah. So this is really one of the bigger stories for downtown in quite some time. Coca-Cola is moving about 2,000 jobs to SunTrust Plaza, which is, of course, on the northern end of what I guess we would call the hotel district, you know, kind of moving into north downtown.
Right.
It's as big a story for downtown as it comes, you know, even relative to all the other big stories that we have going on right now, like the streetcar and
Ferris
the new
wheel.
Stadium and Ferris wheel is fun. Well,
we're going to talk about that.
We'll talk about the Ferris wheel. It's because downtown has, for the last 20 years or so, done really well. You know, certainly in the age of the Olympics and after the Olympics and new attractions, we've done really well with. And Georgia State has come a long way, and we've seen a lot of really really positive developments in downtown. But the office market, when Buckhead and Midtown and Perimeter and downtown is sort of in this broader landscape, the office market sometimes has been the one thing that's sort of kind of lagged behind. And so we do now see, you know, some people starting to look at downtown again for various reasons. And it's great to see a big company looking at downtown.
Yeah, it's a good trend. So, it's a good, they're a good trendsetter. It's Coke. I mean, everybody pays attention to what Coke does. And it is nice to see them coming into town. You know, I mean, one of the things that's important, I think, to keep the downtown area vibrant. I mean, you need people living downtown to keep the nightlife going.
Absolutely.
And all of that. You need the conventions, but you also need the day-to-day lunch eaters, yep. CVS shoppers, you know, people who are around and taking advantage of everything downtown has to offer during the day.
Absolutely. And Jane and I were talking about this before the show, but and you just made the point about residents one of the other big stories that's sort of developing slowly, but I think you'll start to see really kind of rapid development. So we should, you know, make a note on the calendar to talk about it this time next year, where there are several office buildings that are they're looking at becoming residential, and Pace's properties, there's a property on Piedmont that actually just made the cover of the Business Chronicle this week, because they're going to flip that to residential. So you're going to see several of these office buildings that may be what you might have called Class B office space, so it's not being looked at by the Coca-Colas or not, you know, even the mid-sized companies, because they may be looking for something more energy efficient or, you know, more amenities than that older building might have. But it can be flipped into a residential building and made, you know, just awesome space.
Dude, I wish they would do that to the building you work out of, the Hurt building. What a cool building. I would live there.
Well,
like in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
that's a
sure.
cool building.
Yeah, the Hurt's great. It would be, you know, I live in a building, you know, two blocks away from the Hurt that is built in 1930. That's just incredible. It's,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's been a hotel. It's been office space, and it's back to residential now. But there's a lot of things happening, and so in the good thing relative to the real estate market is once that happens, it will take that space off of our, you know, off our lists and of, you know, what vacancies and absorption that these lists that all the real estate folks look at and say, oh, well, downtown has a, you know, much lower absorption rate than these other parts of town. Well, if we actually take some of these buildings off the real estate, off the commercial market, and then and move them to residential, we'll actually see, you know, maybe some absorption levels that rival even our best.
Well, Dan and I were talking, and I've been at the Children's Museum for 9 years, and the changes just in that time frame have been.
Tell us the location of the Children's Museum for people who don't know.
It's right across the street from World of Coke. It's on the corner of Baker Street and Centennial Olympic Park Drive. So it's catty corner across from the park. We consider the park our green space.
Nice.
And the
as you should.
Yeah. And as the changes that have happened in the last 9 years have been just phenomenal. Just there was really not much to do downtown, especially for families with young children. And now it's just, we call it the stroller parade every day. There's just people in the park. There's places to eat. It's just so vibrant now. It's really exciting.
Yeah, obviously you guys are there, the Children's Museum, the aquarium. And I wanted to also mention, when we were talking about Coke moving into town, the other story that I referred to was that AT&T also is putting in an innovation center at Georgia Tech. So it's not quite downtown, but very close by. And a lot of stuff happening, obviously, around the Georgia Tech campus with, you know, businesses coming in and investment coming in. And, you know, they keep saying, and we've talked about this before, I think, that Atlanta is, first of all, I love that Atlanta's always the next whatever, like the next Hollywood, we're the next Silicon Valley, whatever. No, we're just Atlanta. And and we're awesome. And everybody else is going to want to be the next Atlanta,
right?
Because we have this really interesting combination here of like Hollywood of the South and huge like tech innovation. And so we're just going to be our own unique thing that is not Silicon Valley or Hollywood. It's just us. But anyway, so keep your eye out for that. I think the AT&T story is sort of very early on in that story.
That's great.
So, but because we already started talking about Centennial Park and the Children's Museum, it's the perfect time to talk about the Ferris wheel, which is going to be also your neighbor. And according to my sources, the building is actually starting immediately, like this week, I think, right? And it's supposed to open July 2nd.
I think they're aiming for early July.
They're not building it from scratch, for people who are like, how are they going to do that? Is that going to be safe after 2 weeks? No, they're just putting it together.
Right. I think it arrives on like 3 or 4 separate trucks or something. Yeah, it's going to be they've got it down to a science at this point. I think they've moved it around so many times.
Yeah, it's been in a variety of different places. Yeah. We've been talking about it for a few weeks as the stories have been sort of coming out into the media about where it's been located. I think it was in Pennsylvania and it was in Paris or something. But you are like in the know, Dan. So I want the backstory. Like, how did this happen? How did we, and I have to say, you know me, that I have, and you're getting to know me, I have been sarcastic a little bit about the Ferris wheel a few times, because while I think, you know, it will be fun, my question was, you know, the London Eye is the one I think of when I think of a big city Ferris wheel. And I keep saying over and over again on this show, for our listeners who are sick of hearing me say it, that when you go up in the London Eye, you're looking at London with all the historic, beautiful architecture and the water, you know, the Thames and all this. And when you go up in the Atlanta Ferris wheel, you're going to be looking at the downtown connector and I-85 and some smog. I don't know. I'm sorry. I love Atlanta, but I'm just
in that lot.
I don't know. I'm just concerned that there's not enough pretty things to look at when you get up there.
I think it's actually a pretty good space. Yeah, I think you're going to be able to see because I've been on rooftops right in that area. For instance, I watched all of the Final Four, all that stuff. I watched that from a rooftop, all those concerts and whatnot.
You're funny.
Right there. And so, yeah, I mean, from there, and it's not going to be that much different of a view from right there. I think you'll be able to see in the Midtown. You'll be able to see the downtown skyline as well.
Jane has like half an eyebrow raised too. I'm just saying. I'm just saying this is not television; it's radio. So I'm just telling you that. But here's the thing, right? I agree with you. I've been on a rooftop up there as well. Why we're all hanging out on rooftops, I don't know. But I have been up there, and it is pretty. So I'm not saying I am joking about looking at the highway, but it is pretty. But there's not as much like, oh, look over there and see historic X. Oh, look over here and see historic Y. Oh, look at the water going by. It's a pretty skyline. Right. But is it more that the attraction is going to be just being in the Ferris wheel and going up high?
I was going to say, I think there's some level of excitement about going 20 stories up. Isn't it 20 stories?
Maybe. I'm not. Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Okay.
Yeah. We make stuff up on the show all the time. Don't even worry about it. That's how we roll.
Okay. Let's just say it's 20 stories.
Sounds good to me.
If it were 20 stories. It's high. There's a level of excitement about that. And
20 stories. I just verified your facts. Go.
Fact check.
And looking down and seeing people be tiny. And, it's just kind of bird's eye view.
Yeah.
You are.
I think it'll have a great appeal for the folks that are already going to be here in downtown. And it'll just sort of be one of those extra things that makes a visit great to Atlanta. And then hopefully, it'll help bring some locals. You know, it's like, what are we doing this evening? Why don't we go have dinner downtown and do the Ferris wheel for the local that might not want to go all in with a trip to the aquarium or to to the World of Coke somebody that's here for a visit might do, but for the person who just wants to grab dinner, like, well, we're here, why don't we do the Ferris wheel,
rather than just make an evening
out of downtown. And that's a lot of what we sort of try to think about in terms of marketing downtown, is bringing more folks that live in Atlanta, to either keep them here after their day of work or to bring them in.
What else is interesting about that? When Orlando started coming up, when Disney first went there and whatever, you went to Disney and that was it. And then little by little, more and more attractions joined the fray. And now you could go down there and stay there for 2 weeks probably and not see everything, right? And we're almost starting to get like that now. We have so much going on here now. If you were to bring your kids down you could spend a whole day at the Children's Museum, I'm sure.
You could spend your time. I mean, there's so much to do downtown now. And for residents, that's a great thing. You don't have to do it all in one day. You can come down, but you can do a few things. And for residents, I think it's great. I know that when I first moved here in 92, there was not a lot to do, and we didn't get all that many visitors because there wasn't a lot to do.
Yeah.
But now, when people come, there's just an endless list of things to
and I know we've talked about this before too. It feels almost like if you're out in the suburbs, which I was for many years, you come in for something. And of course, for me, this was 10 or 15 years ago when I would come in for something and there wasn't anything else here, right? But now if you come in for something, like let's say I do have small children and I bring them down to the Children's Museum, you look around and you're like, oh, we could come back next weekend and do the Ferris wheel, or we could come back next weekend and do the aquarium, or we could come back next and look, there's a concert. Oh, I see a sign for, there's just so much more. And I think even for tourists now, I mean, it's actually like, you could come on a business trip and bring your family and stay the weekend.
That's a big thing. That's actually, you make a good point, because that's one of the things that we really sort of think about with our convention and visitors market are those people that could bring their family for a vacation. They're here anyway. Why not let, the spouse and the kids go, ramble around town and see this stuff. And, the streetcar is another big thing, because it's actually going to bring some of these folks that, may come over, to Jane's place at the Children's Museum and may come over to some of these other things, but they'll actually be able to take the streetcar up into, Fourth Ward, up into the King Center and experience, a whole different part of town without ever getting in their car. And and so, we think that that's going to be just a huge,
Even though I know, this is sort of our Central Atlanta Progress Day, and we're all like pro downtown here on the show. We're starting to sound like a commercial, which I'm okay with, because I just want to add to that and say, like, the people that are downtown have been dealing with the construction quite a while now, and traffic's slow and streets are blocked and all this crazy stuff. But I was walking across Peachtree last week and looked over and saw the actual tracks going in, and I was like, this is cool. You know, like, it's one thing to, like, just have jackhammers and, like, construction guys and be annoyed at orange cones everywhere, but it's another thing to actually see the tracks. And, you know, I'm from Philadelphia originally, and when I go home now, I hardly ever go there. It's kind of funny that I even just called it home, but when I go back there, I'm always sort of like, wait, where did this come from? And wait, where did that come from? And I feel like for people who grew up here and maybe went off to college and, you know, maybe got a job somewhere else, when they come back, they're not going to recognize Atlanta with Ferris wheels and streetcars. And it's going to be great. I mean, it's really just an amazing amount of progress in a short
time.
Ironically,
somebody that lived here in the 40s would be able to come back and say, oh, yeah, there's a streetcar.
Street
yeah,
okay.
We're used to that. Totally used to that.
Totally,
it's just
fine.
A new one. But, yeah, it is awesome. Jane, have you had a chance to see the tracks going in on Peachtree at all?
I have. It is exciting. Yeah. The more accessibility to downtown, I think, the better for all of Atlanta.
By the way, I liked that reference when you referred to the Children's Museum as Jane's Place, and I think maybe we should change the name.
I like that, actually.
It has a nice ring to it.
Jane's World.
Jane's Place. So I do want to talk. I mentioned before the show, I teased you before we got on the air about having a pet topic that I want to talk about, which I want to bring up now, but I also want to kind of hear what's going on specifically at the Children's Museum. But the issue that I have, and I was just talking about this recently, I think just in I don't think it was on the air, so I'm not boring anybody with the repeat. But one of the things that I've noticed, I've been around a lot of the local attractions, like literary events, things at the Atlanta History Center. I was at a play recently at the Horizon Theater, and I look around at the people in the audience, and I see all mostly women, but all older. I'm one of the younger people there, and I'm not that young. So it's a concern of mine, and sort of an ongoing concern, that there's a big gap in taking advantage of the arts and, you know, attractions that are more intellectual, maybe, by sort of, and the reason I want to talk about it with you, Jane, is that I think kids sort of automatically are taken to those things. It's school field trips. It's parents trying to figure out what to do with them. It's summer camps. You know, they go to Callenwald. You know, they come to the Children's Museum. They go to the aquarium. They do things like that. And then there's a big gap. And I don't know if they're just busy in college and they don't have time, or they are just so involved in their computer screens that they don't think to go outside and find other entertainment, or what. But I really feel like it's critical. I was having this conversation, sitting in the audience in intermission of the play that I was at, which was the book club play at Horizon Theater, which was great, by the way. I think they might have one show left that you could get tickets for. It was awesome. Very funny. But I was having this conversation with a girlfriend of mine who's in her mid to late 50s, and she was saying, no, don't worry. I think they'll come back. You know, I think they'll come back when they get to be our age, and the seats will still be filled with old people. It'll just be the new generation of old people. I don't know if that's true.
Well, it's I'm glad this was your surprise topic, because I think it's a really an important one. I think there are a lot of factors going on. And one of the things, and not to toot our horn, but one of the things children's museums do in general, and ours does, is introduce children very young to a lot of different things that we hope we serve as a springboard to get children comfortable with things like theater. We have a troupe of professional actors at the Children's Museum. So every day there are performances that are very comfortable for children to participate in. So we're really ready partners to all of Atlanta's attractions, and we hope by having families come and not just school trips that they get introduced to what else is available in Atlanta, because we love people to come, but there's a lot to do in Atlanta, and we want people to take advantage of everything. But as far as what happens with the drop-off, I think they're right now, people get their entertainment right away.
Yeah.
For example, if you want to see Midsummer Night's Dream, well, you can wait till it's performed somewhere at 8 p.m. downtown or wherever, or you can download it and watch it in your jammies.
Yeah.
So I think there's a need to have people understand that there is a deeper experience when something's in person,
yeah.
when you're with a community, watching the same thing, and supporting the community and each other. So I'm not sure where it will go, but I think that's probably some of what's at work here.
It's so interesting because, you know, I'm a member of a book club. I'm actually like the grand poobah of my book club. And it's a public book club and it has 300 members or something like that. And they don't all show up because that would be a disaster. But like 20 people show up every meeting and we always have new people and it's great. And one of the things so book clubs actually are attracting some younger women anyway, for the most part. We'll occasionally get a guy, but they usually get scared off and run away crying. It's very sad. But, you know, so we have women generally that come to our public book club anywhere from the youngest is probably 23 and on up into their 60s. And so it's a really nice mix of ages and because it's public as opposed to being a subdivision or a company or something. But it's interesting because it's like the reading community has adapted because bookstores have started to go away, you know. And so readers are finding each other and realizing that even though reading is a solitary sport, if you will, that coming together to talk about a book that you've read in common is a really enriching thing to do. However, I have also experienced that if you do not include alcohol in said book club meeting, you get a lot less people showing up,
yeah.
Which is very interesting because I do a program for the Roswell Reads. Every year I go and facilitate a reading for them. And for years they were asking me to do it and I would do it. And it was at the library. So there was no alcohol. And I would get like four people in their 70s that would show up for the reading. And originally I was living in Roswell and I owned a bookstore there. So I was like, okay, great. Finally, I said, look, I'm in Midtown now. I don't want to drive out to Roswell for four people. If you could put this somewhere where we can get alcohol and a bigger crowd, I'm all in. So last year we moved it. We moved to a Starbucks that serves wine on Alpharetta Highway.
Really?
Oh my God. I don't know if they're still doing it, but really, Starbucks does not do anything in a bad way. Like, it was so well done. They had hors d'oeuvres. They had wine. It was good wine. It was really great. And we had 20 people, of course, because there was wine. And we had a great discussion, and it was wonderful. Anyway, my point being, and that's a marketing thing on my part, is like, I know that women who are in book club like to drink wine. And let's have wine, and we'll get more people. And we did. And I almost think that's a little bit what needs to happen in some of these other arenas. Like when I think of going to the History Center, or let me put it this way, before I ever went to the History Center, if I ever even thought about it at all, I would have imagined a bunch of people with white hair and a stodgy, like boring lecture. Mm-hmm. But if they were to just do, you know, like martinis and IMAX, you know, that's a really brilliant thing. And if they start doing some of those types of marketing things, maybe to bring that 20-something crowd back.
Yeah. All right. So I'll make a couple points. I'm sure Jane has, but just sort of being the kind of millennial, you know, voice, I'll try to
yes,
be.
Yes, please.
I was making this point to Jane earlier. It's like I'm right on the cusp of being a millennial or Gen Xer.
We'll take you as a millennial for this discussion.
So just in terms of Atlanta, I think, you know, I share some of the concerns, especially as it comes to, you know, fine arts and theater, some of these things, especially the traditional venues. That said, I think there's some really important things happening. I think we just, like many other things, we just do it differently, right? Millennials just do it differently.
That should be on a T-shirt,
right? Yeah, you know, and you know, let's use the goat farm as an example.
Okay,
right? Have you been to the goat farm? Been to the goat farm?
I have not.
Okay, so the goat farm is a piece of property off of Huff Road, which is in the West Side, which has been a community of artists for the last. Really, I think the last 20 to 30 years, it's been really kind of run by artists for quite some time. But in the last 5 years, they have taken a more of a kind of let's bring the community in and make this a place where art sort of thrives in all its forms. And the artists here have a place to live and to commune together. But also we're going to have, you know, theater and dance and music and, you know, sort of things that combine all of these forms. And you can go to the goat farm on any given night and there's something interesting happening. It's not happening in the same way that, you know, a night at the theater would have traditionally happened, where you might go to a restaurant across the street and get dressed up and then go see a show. It's happening in, you know, sort of this more, you know, it's happening in a, I guess a little, you know, I don't know, maybe edgier is the right way, but
it's okay.
You know,
I think that makes sense.
You know, it's just happening in a different way. I mean, and the other example, I mean, I'm sort of a music nerd, so I'm also a musician. So the music scene in Atlanta, you know, it is just phenomenal. And I'm not just talking about the music midtown, the big, the more corporatized sort of music scene. I'm talking about, you know, small venues that are having incredible independent music and incredible local music. And then same thing with the local art galleries. You know, I think we have a really cool scene with art galleries and, you know, small local theater companies. I think we just do it differently. It doesn't look the same way as, you know, the play at the, you know, at the theater that everybody knows that, and everybody kind of gets together and gets dressed up and goes out for a night.
Well, that's a good point. I think that's interesting because I've been to a couple of, I'm going to just call them younger events. I'm not that old, but I'm in the middle somewhere. We're just going to say. And the thing is, I have been to some younger events where I didn't see all white hair people and I did see younger people. And you're right. Like some of them were at smaller art galleries. You know, I went to, I can't think of what it was called now, but there was some kind of like spoken word sort of event, Decatur maybe, that was younger, you know, Eddie's Attic, certainly younger, you know, things like that. But so I guess what I'm saying is, and this is where, you know, again, you know, when you look at it as an executive director and when you look at these problems as somebody who's involved in sort of the business of bringing people to attractions, can we learn from what some of those, where the millennials are going? And so, because here's what my concern is that the Atlanta History Center is going to go away because there's nobody's going to want to support it, you know, because they're going to be supporting the goat farm, right? And so how do we protect some of these jewels that we have?
Well, I think it's about communicating with the public. So being relevant, making sure you're staying relevant to the community that you're in. So if you keep doing things the same way and the community is changing in how they participate in the arts, in culture, then, you know, you're going to struggle. So I think it's really, and it's hard. It's hard to change, you know, the way you've been doing things and the way it's been successful for years. But you really do have to stay connected with the community around you and say, what are people looking for and how is it they're trying to get to these experiences? So, you know, I think it's tough. I think things are changing very quickly. Again, how people consume their entertainment and culture. But I do think one of the things you've both mentioned, both from your book group experience and then the goat farm, is that people do really seek a sense of community with others.
Yep.
And so I think if a place can nurture that sense of community, then...
And I think that's the goat farm is just a shining example of that because you really – and I've spent time with people that live there, and you can also go there on a night where there's not a major event and artists are just sitting around a table, you know, in the courtyard talking about, you know, talking about their work or what or life or whatever, but they're actually, you know, there's actually a community there that is actually sort of propelling them and you know, nurturing what they do. So you know, there's all of those things. I think they're interesting examples. You know, something like the History Center. I'm actually in my other life, I'm a consultant for the Community Foundation, and they've given me a grantee who is this Battle of Atlanta group, and so we've been trying to help them figure out how do they stay relevant. So this is interesting conversation, you know, because I'm actually helping them to figure out. You know, we're actually having these conversations of how do you stay relevant to the neighborhoods and to younger folks, and
it's an interesting mix because I have to say, like having you know being somewhere in the middle, I also like I've gotten I'm aware of the goat farm though I haven't been, and I've gotten a lot of you know, advertisements for, hey, come to this event at the goat farm or that event. You know, I have friends that, you know, will send something out on Facebook, come to this or that at the goat farm. And I'm actually a little bit intimidated because I'm like, a goat farm? What do I do there? Is there a place to sit? Will I get dirty? What's going to happen? You know, for somebody my age, I'm like, oh, the History Center. I know what that is. I can handle that. There'll be a chair and I can have a glass of wine. It'll be in a plastic cup. It'll be great. You know, so there's an interesting gap there, I think, just both sides. Like, I think probably the goat farm, they probably don't need to change anything. Right. But if they did want to maybe get more investment money from some of the older folks, they might need to be a little bit more easily understood by people who don't already know what they are, you know?
The other thing is, I think, expense.
Some of these venues are quite expensive.
Yeah.
And I know at the Children's Museum, I mean, it costs money to run an operation.
Sure.
It's not for free. You know, Georgia Power continues to want to get paid for the electrical services. you know, I know. I don't think it's for the children. But so what we do is we go, if we're only reaching a segment of the community that can truly afford to come, then we're not really being relevant necessarily
yeah.
all the way. So I just know at the Children's Museum, we do a lot to raise money so that we can have outreach programs that welcome a lot of different people to be able to come to the museum easily. And I think that's been an important factor, because the arts are only going to stay strong, I think, if the whole community feels a sense of ownership and participation in those arts. And if you're just reaching a very small slice of people, then you're going to run out of relevance, I think. It's not going to be relevant to the community as a whole.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the Children's Museum and sort of how you stay relevant and what you have going on there. And how hard do you have to work to sort of keep up with the trends, if you will?
Well, we work really hard. But
of course you do.
One of the ways, we're a relatively small staff. I mean, we don't have a million people. We're not expert at every single topic. Yet our charge is to introduce children to virtually all topics. So the way we do that is that we invite the community to participate with us in defining what are the major issues for the community with regard to young children. So we have an amazing group of volunteers who come from our educational institutions, volunteers, parents, everyone, to come and say, you know, some of the hot topics for families are issues around health and well-being, childhood obesity, we all know that, literacy. All of these topics are really important. The environment, technology, the use of technology, science, technology, engineering, math. And we welcome the community to help us really learn about what's important for us to present and how should we do that. So that's one of the ways that we stay plugged in to the community. We also do, we have extensive outreach so that we are out in a lot of underserved neighborhoods in our city on a regular basis. And we're able to do that through funding from foundations and whatnot. But we're working hard to make sure we're reaching as many people as we can.
And now, one of the things I also think, you know, you certainly know as an adult, obviously, I'm more tuned into, like, say, let's say the High Museum and what they're doing. And they have big billboards everywhere, so you can't really miss it. So one of the things that they obviously do to keep people coming back is they bring in new exhibits. Mm-hmm. Do you do the same kind of thing at the Children's Museum? And how do you let people know? And do people come and sort of feel like, well, I've been here, I've seen it, I'll have to go back?
We bring in three changing exhibits a year. So right now, we just opened a couple of weeks ago an exhibit called Weeble's Coast to Coast. It is, quote, travel to all 50 states. It is so much fun, and it's deeply educational. You can go. I said to someone who was visiting the museum this week, I think I'm the only person in Atlanta that can ask if you'd like to see Old Faithful today, right now. So, you know, this exhibit has, you can go down, and it's not just a picture of Old Faithful or a film of Old Faithful. It is an interactive where you stand at the railing, and all of a sudden, Old Faithful erupts. You can go snorkeling in Hawaii. You can go on a sled dog ride in Alaska. You can be at Times Square on New Year's Eve. There are just so many things that really highlight the diversity of our states and what's available. And what's been really cool has been to watch visitors come. And Atlanta has drawn... Everyone comes to Atlanta. There are so many people who have moved here from other states, myself included. And so what I'm seeing are parents going, hey, your grandparents live in Michigan. Let's go check out Michigan. And so it's been really fun. So that's been in the fall, we're going to open an exhibit called Moneyville, which should interest the business community.
You heard about it here on Business Radio X first.
But Moneyville, for example, just explores money as a concept. The long time ago, chocolate was considered money. I still consider chocolate money.
But if you want to bring me chocolate, I will.
So it is really, we really explore a lot of different topics through our changing exhibits.
Interesting. I think it's interesting. The one you have now with the states is really interesting for kids because obviously, you know, again, I'm not a child development expert and I don't even play one on TV, but you know, I know one of the things with babies, you know, the first thing that happens is they don't know that they're separate from their mother. Then they figure out that they are their own thing. And then it becomes all about them for however many years. And they don't really realize there's anything more, I think. And as you grow up, you start to figure out, well, there's more than just me. There's me and my family. There's me and my family in this house. There's me and my family in this house in this school district. And I go play with these kids over here. But some people never get past their own community. They don't even realize that they can leave, or that there are other opportunities. And so bringing kids to see 50 states, that's a cool thing, you know, because
really
then all of a
great.
Sudden you're like, hey, I can go somewhere where it snows all the time, or I can be somewhere where there's a volcano. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing.
This has been this is definitely one of my favorite exhibits that we've brought here. It is just absolutely endlessly fun, and it's entertaining not only for the children, but quite honestly for the adults. So if you go to, quote, Maine, you can learn to tie knots because there's a lot of sailing around there. And so I saw a dad taking his hand at tying some of these complicated knots. It's just really fun and engaging.
You know, it reminds me, it makes me think about some experiences I had growing up in museums and, or, you know, experiencing culture for the first time. And I'm going to just tell my story and then I'm going to see, Dan, if you have any memories like that. So start racking your brain right now. But I remember being a little girl. I grew up in Philadelphia and I remember going to, I think it was like the Ben Franklin, I don't remember the name of the museum now, but it was the Science Museum in Philadelphia. I can't think of what it was called. It'll come to me. Oh, the Franklin Institute. There it is. And they had and I don't know if they still have it, but they had like a full size scale thing, not scale, duh, but like a huge, huge heart that you could walk through the inside of a heart. And I remember walking through that and I still remember it. And I went on a school field trip. I was probably in first grade or second grade, 6 or 7 years old, and how cool I thought that was. And I always wanted to go back to the Franklin Institute and go through the heart because it was so cool. Now, of course, I went again when I was older and it wasn't nearly as cool as it was when I was 6 or 7, but what a cool thing. And especially for somebody, you know, we talk about STEM education all the time, science, technology, engineering, math. For somebody who never even thought about I could be a heart surgeon, to like walk through that full size heart and see the quadrants and understand, and it's just real. And I'm completely not that person. I was not a science girl at all, but I just thought that was really cool.
Well, isn't it interesting that you still remember that?
That's
and
why I brought
so
it up.
You probably don't remember your day in class when you had to memorize the chambers of the heart and write them down, but rather walking through the heart is so memorable. And that's the other thing I'm passionate about, which is if you look at opportunities like a children's museum as encouraging innovation, when you're learning something, I don't care if you're a child or an adult, if you read about it, that's important. But then if you experience it, then you're sealed on learning that. And then you could even think of new ideas. So if you're looking at the future and the fact that we're a global community and we need innovative thinkers. Innovative thinkers don't just happen at 21. You don't just become innovative. It starts from very young. So you need these really hands-on experiences, which really goes back to the original conversation about experiencing the arts in person, about doing these things in person as a community, because that if you're just sitting in your house, it's just, you know, gets kind of dull.
And the thing is, you talk about, and you mentioned expense too. And so just for the sake of it, what does it cost to go to the Children's Museum on a normal day?
On a normal day, it costs $12.75, which is comparable to a movie, except you can stay there all day.
Right.
We have membership opportunities for families that make it extremely cost effective. You know, you can come every day of the year once you've paid your membership.
Yeah, and that's what I was actually, I'm glad you said the movies, because that's the one sort of like bar that everyone sort of talks about in terms of affordable entertainment, because most people, I think, go to the movies and fairly regularly for a lot of people. I know I do, partly because it's so convenient. There's movie theaters everywhere. You can just go, you know, 10 minutes from your house probably and get to a movie theater. But the movies have gotten really expensive. And, you know, you don't think about the whole cost sometimes because you pay for the ticket maybe online, and then you show up and you don't take cash out of your pocket, but then you go and get your concessions. It's an expensive outing. And the truth is, you know, I was at the, like I keep saying, at the Horizon Theater the other day. It was cheaper to go to the Horizon Theater and have lunch with my girlfriends beforehand than it is to go to a movie and have popcorn and a Coke. Yeah. So it is, you know, and that's another thing. I think people maybe know that intellectually if they think about it, but somehow we have lost the true emotional feeling of that. You just assume that a day out at the theaters, because maybe the comparison to the Fox Theater is very expensive, right? But there's a lot of community theaters that are affordable. I'm sure there are events at like the Goat Farm that are very affordable, at the History Center, at the Children's Museum. So it's kind of interesting. It's like another thing that we sort of just need to find a way to kind of crack open people's brains and shove that in there, because it's actually cheaper, I think, right, sometimes to do what you would think of as a more expensive day.
Mm-hmm. And sure. Yeah, some, I mean, absolutely. Some of the best cultural experiences I've had in Atlanta have been free or next to free. I mean, one of the things that I should have mentioned earlier, you know, when talking about things that, you know, art experiences that millennials, you know, are kind of drawn to, and I don't think it's just millennials, but a Flux Night in Castleberry. Have you ever had a chance to go? So Castleberry Hill, you know, has several arts galleries, and they do an art walk every month, and you know, we considered Castleberry to be a part of downtown, but every fall they put together this event called Flux Night, and it's this just amazing array of arts that are curated, but all to be sort of experienced mostly outdoors or within a gallery that's in Castleberry. So, you know, the idea is that you're able to float around from venue to venue in Castleberry Hill and experience all of these things. And I think it's free. I mean, you know, you just walk right through. But it's, you know, the money is raised for it from foundations and other entities. But you know, it's one of the coolest things that you can do in the city, and it's free. And there's a lot of these opportunities, and you know, you have to seek them out. And social media, I think, is another key, you know, because I think that's how at least younger people are drawn to things, and so. You know, having that is a, you know, I think, you know, I joke about the selfies and the selfie generation, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of us, and myself included, that do try to use social media to try to get people to, you know, to these more interesting things that are going on in Atlanta versus, you know,
just let's go to a movie again.
Let's go to another movie, or, you know, Music Midtown. I know I'm kind of down on Music Midtown, but I'm
I love
Midtown. I love Piedmont Park. I'm just, you know, I'm not.
Well, I don't want to let you totally off the hook either because I asked you if you had any memories of
Yeah,
like,
well, I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, so I grew up going to the Space Museum, to the Space and Rocket Center, like, every month. In fact, I was pretty obsessed as a young child, and so it was my reward for everything was to go to the Space and Rocket Center. So, you know, I have these vivid memories of being, you know, seeing these movies about space and experiencing space sort of, you know, and, you know, I think it's to this day, I'm just completely fascinated by space, as many people are, but I think that was, you know, completely, you know, just an amazing thing to have available to you young and, you know, at that age. So,
and Jane, do you have a memory like that?
Well, actually, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and they didn't have a children's – there was a children's museum. It was called the Pink Palace, so now I'm dating myself. But
I love that name.
It was not like modern children's museums, and the thing I remember most was that there was an actual shrunken head. that lives with me the way your heart lives with you, but not quite so
– Not in such a positive
it's
way.
It's more like nightmare quality.
See, when you say shrunken head, I immediately think of Beetlejuice, and so therefore I'm now dating myself too.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, that we can get formative memories like that as little kids that stick with us. I mean, I'm sure all of us have – you know, I can think about maybe three or five things total, probably, that from my childhood that I still can picture clearly, and that one of them is a museum experience. It's pretty interesting. And I think it's a, you know, again, not to be like cheerleader, rah-rah. I should be a little bit more like a Barbara Walters, like hardcore journalist, but I don't have it in me, I don't think.
Well, there's no seedy underbelly to a children's museum. I mean, there's nothing to
Right, there's nothing to dig into. But I think my point is that, you know, before we wrap up, I just want to sort of say, like, because we're thinking about these memories we have as children that stuck with us, you got to get your kids there. I mean, you got to give that to your kids. You know, even if you just do it once, you know, you probably do it once and want to do it again. But you got to give that to your kids because it's just a sort of a cool part of who I am now, you know?
It's really essential. It's memorable. It's important. And it's community.
Yeah.
But, and one last quick thing, which is when we talk about free, 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 we try to provide as many opportunities to welcome the public free of charge as we can. But also, I think the community needs to understand that places like the Children's Museum are a nonprofit and do need the investment of
Absolutely.
The community. We're charging admission not because we're, you know, looking to have piles of money, but to keep ourselves open and functioning and healthy. And so while we want to welcome people free of charge whenever we can, we also need people to understand that the community as a whole needs to invest in these places, whether it's the Children's Museum, yep. the History Center, whatever it is. So
I think people, you know, who can afford it, even if it's free, should probably go ahead and contribute. And I try to do that when I can, even if it's a little bit, right? Every little bit helps. Every dollar mm-hmm. is good. You know, so funny, I, on a totally separate note, before I let you go, and I do want to get contact information, website, and all that stuff from you, but I'm getting a new cell phone and I'm switching carriers, and I did a whole show on how irritated I was with my current carrier. So
right.
I will not drag you into that feeling. But anyway, I was talking to the new carrier on the phone and they said, we have a trade-in policy. We can take your old phone and we'll give you some money for it. And I said, okay, you know, and they said, what's the model and make? And I told them, and they came back and they said, we'll give you $7 for that. And I said, 70? And she said, no. Seven. I said, 17? No, seven. $7. That's what my cell phone is worth, everyone. And I said, and she, though she said to me then, but you could use $7, right? I mean, like that, you know, and I
said, could use a hamburger, right? Yeah.
I at first I was sort of like irritated and I thought, no, I'm not going to give you my phone for $7. I'm going to put it in the drawer. And then I thought, you know what? I actually could use $7 because I mean, it's kind of stupid, but if I put it in the drawer, nothing's going to happen, and I'm going to have $0. So maybe I'll take my $7 and give it to the Children's Museum, because I'm sure you could use $7.
We would be very grateful and thrilled to consider you one of our major donors.
There you go. And I know we didn't talk about it. You, before we went on the air, you talked a little bit about the importance of play, and I think we'll probably have to have you back so we can have
okay.
a whole show on play. Which is probably important for adults and kids.
It is.
But before we let you go, please give us some, you know, contact information. So if people want to bring their kids to the Children's Museum or they want to give you some money or whatever, they can do it.
The easiest way, of course, is our website, which is childrensmuseumatlanta.org. Our phone number is 404-659-KIDS. 5437.
So everybody go to Jane's Place, the Children's Museum. I love it. We have to have an exhibit that's just Jane's Place at, you know, I think we can.
We don't have martinis there.
Well, that, pretty, I mean, I think for your, what you're doing, that probably makes sense.
Juice boxes and.
Right. Juice boxes and IMAX or something. Yeah, that probably makes sense. You don't want to get the parents drunk and let them drive their kids home.
Never
not a good
thing.
No. All right. Well, the Children's Museum, great place to go. Central Atlanta Progress, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. See you next month.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Same time.
Well, maybe not. I think we're going to be moving the show. I should let the listeners know to 9:30 instead of 9, because we're adapting, and that's what we do. Just because I want to sleep late. All right, so that again wraps it up for us. Thanks again to the Children's Museum and Central Atlanta Progress for joining us today, and to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and stay tuned for more great programming here on Business Radio X.